Good afternoon, everyone. I could have asked for two better songs prior to this message. I certainly appreciate the special music, and of all the songs I've ever heard, I could not pick two better to warm up the audience for me, and I appreciate that. I want to start right off the bat with my title, because it's going to be important to kind of get the idea of where I'm going with this. The title is My First Sermon in the Kingdom. My First Sermon in the Kingdom. What I'm going to do is I'm going to first talk about that idea by way of introduction. It'll probably take me about 15 minutes if I'm lucky. If I'm unlucky, it'll take me longer. But then I will actually start, in essence, not to role play, but in essence give what I have come up for Dave Horvath's first sermon in the kingdom. The point of the message, of course, is that we all individually should be thinking about things like this. For me, with the feast coming up in just over 2 weeks, it really was touching. It was a moving study. It was humbling, to say the least, to think about that actual day. Giving your first teaching session, your first sermon in the kingdom, what will you say? What will you do? How will you come across? What message would you give? It might be a good introduction to many conversations at the feast this year. I hope to use that maybe in conversation and ask that question to some people. What would you give as your first message in God's kingdom? And see what answers I get. And I don't mean to be presumptuous with it. My first sermon in the kingdom. Of course, Christ will give the first sermon, I'm sure, David, the 12 apostles. But again, I don't think that God, Jesus Christ, is going to work through a broadcast of supernatural global voice that gives this worldwide encompassing first sermon that we all hear through the atmosphere. I think God, we'll work through the people, the spirit beings at that time that he has put in place in his government. Christ, of course, may have an outline for us. I hope he does. But for now, I don't know what that is. You can make any assumptions you would like to make yourself comfortable to help you in getting to the point where you would sit down and maybe make notes on this is what I would say in my first sermon in the kingdom. So what would you teach? What would be your first sermon in the kingdom? Would you summarize the plan, the outline of God, the incredible human potential? Is that too much to cover? Is that what you would maybe do in some format? Would you try to cover who and what is the nature of God, the God family? Again, it's entirely up to you. Would you give an overview of the law of blessings and cursings? Again, the blessings primarily that will occur as a result of God's law, God's truth. Would you give the storyline of mankind from Adam to that point in time? Again, could it be done? You might come up with a creative way to simplify that and make it a very effective message. Would you talk about God's Holy Spirit, repentance, and conversion? Certainly would be needed. Baptism. There's lots of messages we could choose. Would you tell your personal story of your calling and where God's truth took you as a human? That would be effective, giving your own story. For me, I came up with kind of keys, benefits to having gone through this exercise of thinking about that moment in time. It will happen. That day will come sooner or later. It helps me get perspective and purpose. We think about ourselves, of course, with the Feast of Tabernacles coming up. And, I can get wrapped up, like many of us can, about all the things I want to do at the feast. What will we do in service with Christ in the kingdom? Well, all I care about is I want to eat, I want to drink, I want to play, I want to play golf, I want to relax, I want to sleep in, I want to eat ice cream with peanut butter on it. I want to do all these fun things for eternity. That's what I want to do. Can we get caught up in that? And the answer, of course, is yes, we can. We can limit ourselves. We need to grow beyond God's kingdom for me. Now, God is not calling us so that we can enjoy the kingdom for ourselves. We know that. Nothing new. You know, I can't wait until I get to do this and that and this. I get to experience this. At some point, we've got to grow beyond that and be thinking about it. The feast should be a time for us to think about the roles that we will be in teaching. We must grow beyond that thinking to see the kingdom as God sees it. And the kingdom is step number 6, a 1,000-year step, but it's step number 6 in a 7-year plan. Oftentimes, I can speak for myself, we look at it as the finish line. If I get there, I'm on cruise control. I get to enjoy all these things for eternity. Again, and it will be enjoyment. Don't want to underplay that or underscore that. The kingdom will be awesome eventually. It won't be glamorous. It won't be glitzy up front. We can be certain of that. But if we see God or see the kingdom as God sees it, step number 6 or 7, he's bringing many sons to glory, not just the first fruits. You know, a thought that occurred to me in preparation of this message is, you know, there is obviously something very special about first fruits, about the firstborn. Anyone that's a parent here knows that. It's a special thing. But what is more special than that? Is there something, in one sense, more special? And I thought, you know, what's even more special is having your family take a little drink of water. Is having your family share in the birth of additional children. And that's special. Think about it from God's perspective. The first fruits, that's exciting. Will it be more exciting to see the first fruits enjoying and participating in the process of bringing future children? I think so. Well, there are certain facts we can be sure of as you think about this idea. Certain facts. One is, again, these are kind of assumptions I made and certain facts in preparation or in thinking about this moment in time. Christ will have established and introduced his government. That's a fact. You know, it's not ambiguous. There's no mystery at that time. It won't be vague. It won't be secretive. And we know that Matthew 24, verse 27. And you don't need to turn there. Matthew 24, 27 tells us, "For as the lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be." It's not going to be like, I wonder what's happened. And people are going to hear, you know, either through media, through rumor, through just the spread of information, that Christ has returned, or someone who claims to be Christ. They may not believe everything that they're hearing, but they're going to know about it. They're going to know about it. It won't be secretive, obviously, given the events of the end time. They're going to know something incredible, miraculous, supernatural, divine has occurred. They're going to know that. Christ will introduce his leadership in some form or fashion. He's not going to keep that secret. Oh, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody who's in control, who's in charge. Christ is going to make that known. That's the purpose that he returns, is to establish his government. He's not going to do so in a vague manner. So again, we'll have the advantage when we give that first sermon, is the remnant, the people that remain, they're going to know that you represent the divine authority of the universe. So that's an assumption I made, because there's no hiding the return of Jesus Christ. There's no hiding his establishment of his government. So my second fact surrounding this moment in time is we will be spirit beings at that time. The Feast of Trumpets obviously had already occurred. Christ returned. Those that were dead were called up, raised into the, you know, resurrected. We meet them in the air. We're converted. We're spirit beings by this time. That's a big plus. I can assure you my spirit being version of my first sermon will be better than what I give today. But we'll be spirit beings. Revelation 20, verse 6 says, "Blessed and holy is he who is part in the first resurrection." that occurs at trumpets. Over such, the second death has no power. Why? Because we're spirit beings. But they shall be priests of God and of Christ and shall reign with him 1,000 years. We're not going to be resurrected or in a moment in a twinkling of an eye turned into spirit beings and then sent to a spirit being training academy for 100 years. We're going to spend the first 100 years or 200 years in training for those roles. We're in that training now. Part of that training, I think, is thinking about that moment. Why? Because it's an interesting thought. It helps you think about, you know, my being here has more purpose than my salvation. There are others that will depend on everything from you as a representative of Christ's government. Which is my third point, as far as a fact. People will be dependent on you and generally be receptive. I know that because Matthew 24, verse 21 says, "For then there shall be great tribulation such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be." Verse 22, "And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened." The earth is going to be a wreck. If people aren't going to look to local governments because they won't exist. They'll be in shambles. They're not going to run down to Kroger or Publix or Harris Teeter for food. You know, the systems of mankind are going to be devastated, destroyed. You know, the bulk of the population has been killed. I mean, just the devastation never seen before in the history of mankind, nor never will be. That's the condition that we'll be giving that first sermon in. We know the purpose of much of that end time events, the 2.5 years of Satan and his wrath in the Great Tribulation, the last 1 year, the day of the Lord, God's wrath in that sense. When those things happen, it's going to humble mankind. That's the purpose of it in that sense. God is using those events to show man he cannot do it by himself. He is showing with those events that, you know, you can't have a prideful, you know, in your face attitude with the creator of the universe. God is humbling mankind. In essence, mankind is doing it to himself. But again, that's being used for God's greater good in his plan. So my sermon basics, then, in my mind, I was thinking, well, I need something general, something simple. I can't, maybe somebody can, but I couldn't cover some of these other big subjects. So I needed to make it simple, to the point, general. I wanted something that would unite common goals or common hope that people have. Thirdly, I wanted to introduce that there is only one way. There's no hocus pocus, stir up some ideas, pick out the good one, and something's going to work. You know, man has had all the time to try out every idea under the sun. And there is only one way. So I wanted to emphasize that. And fourth, I wanted to emphasize the hope that it starts today. It doesn't start in the future. It's not something you have to hope for in the future. It's not something you have to look forward to in another lifetime. It's something for them, for those that are living at that first sermon, it will start right then. It'll start today. I realize I'm unworthy to give this sermon here today, but certainly the one in the future. But, you know, I believe I'll have that opportunity. You know, I try not to be emotional. It's an emotional subject. When you think about it, when you go through the thoughts and put yourself in the shoes of those that will be there, it's a tough subject. It's a tough subject. At least it was for me. So what will you do in service with Christ to mankind in God's kingdom? What will you do? What will you teach? What will your first sermon in the kingdom be? As imperfect as this will be, here's my first sermon in the kingdom. Who knows what is cartography? Cartography. You can yell it out if you know what is cartography. That's right. Map making. Cartography or map making has been an integral part of mankind's history as an essential tool to help man define, explain, navigate, and travel through the world. In simple, maps have been used to get from point A to point B. I've got with me here a map. I've been from Tennessee for a long time. This is simply a map of Tennessee. It shows everything from cities, towns, streets. It does show topography. It shows counties. It shows benchmarks, landmarks. It shows marinas at lakes, all the street indicators, signs. Of course, it has a scale on it to determine distance. And all the information that you would need if you're in Tennessee to get from point A to point B, as long as you knew where you were starting from. If you knew where you were starting from, you can get to anywhere in Tennessee with this map. Our cartographer has done a good job. It's a detailed map. All right, I've got a question. What do we all share? What do we all have in common? Every person who's ever lived, every person who's here today, what do we share? What do we have in common? It's not age. It's not gender. Not nationality. It's not education. It's not talents. We have different experiences, different ideologies. We have different religions, different backgrounds, different fears, different doubts, different hopes. We're all different, but what is it that we have in common? What is it that we share and share alike? I've got, in essence, three parts of that answer. Three parts of the answer to the question, what do we all have in common here today? We've survived through horrible events, things we hope and know that we'll never see again. Part number one of my answer is that we all start from point A. We all start at a point A, which is where we've been and where we find ourselves. We all start with point A. Let me ask you a question. Has anyone here never experienced death, destruction, war, violence, anger, hatred? Don't we have that in common? Don't we have that in common? Unfortunately, we do. I don't care if you've come from wealth, from success, from any nation on earth. We have that in common. We've experienced those horrible things. Has anyone here not experienced bad government, poor leadership, abuse of power on a national level, in school, on a sports team? Parents, does anyone here never experienced abuse of power or poor leadership or poor government? We've all experienced that. That's something is in our point A. We have that in common. We've all experienced that. Anyone here never experienced evil, failure, suffering, despair, deep fears, doubts, worries, conflict, strife? All those things. There's no person on earth from Adam to this day who has not experienced those things. We all have that point A, which I'm using, of course, as a way to explain an idea. We all have that point A in common. What we share, what is universal and common, is that all of our storylines include a point A. A point A. All of our personal storylines include mistakes, bad decisions, fears, problems, difficulties, regrets, and so on and so on and so on. That's the human story. We have that in common. It's a common human point A. Money wouldn't solve those. Success, good looks wouldn't have taken those things from you. We all have that in common. Well, my answer to, or part B, to the question, what do we share in common? Of course, point number one, or answer number one, we all have a point A. Well, the second part is we all have a point B that we hope for. We all have a point B as individuals, as families, as communities, as nations, as mankind. we have a point B of where we want to be. If you're wealthy, you want to be more wealthy. If you have misery, you want hope. You want success. No one wants to live or remain at their point A forever. Who wants that? Nobody. What is universal, again, common, is the desire for a point B, for something better and not A. We don't want to remain at point A. We want point B, one marked or defined or described by peace. There's nobody that says, no, I don't want peace. I want war and conflict and misery and hate all my life. There's no person on earth who truly wants that. There might have been somebody. But generally speaking, even the ones that we look at as evil think that they're doing something, either nationalistic pride or whatever it may be. Everybody wants to, fulfillment, to be productive. That's a good part B or point B. I don't want to feel unproductive, unfulfilled, lacking purpose in life. We want, as people, as cities, as towns, as countries, as nations, we want to be fulfilled. We want to be productive. Kindness, that's all in our point B that we wish to get to. We don't want to be treated poorly everywhere we go by everyone. We want kindness. We want a sense of community, of belonging, of fitting in, of having purpose, of being on a team. We have that in common as mankind, as individuals, towns, cities, counties, states, you name it. They'll try for those things, a sense of community, of being, of belonging. How about love? Yeah, we have that in common. We all share a common point B of love. We want that as people. Of course we do. Prosperity. No. I want to be poor, miserable, and lacking resources. I want to go hungry every day. Nobody says that. Nobody wants to remain in that point A. We want to get to point B. Just like on a map, we all have a point A, which is common. And we have a common, many commonalities in our point B, where we want to be. Good health. That's in our point B, isn't it? No, I want to suffer through pain and misery, handicap, disease. I want all those conditions because I enjoy that. Nobody wants to remain in that point A. I'm 85 years old and I can hardly get around. I want to remain that way for eternity. I want to feel like this forever. No, nobody says that. Nobody thinks that. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants their point A for eternity. We all want a better way. We want a point B that is these things. We want friendships. We share that in common. We have that in common. We want truth. I've never met a person who loves to be lied to. I want everybody to lie to me from everything about what I believe, my government, my family, my spouse, my friends. I want everybody to lie to me all the time. Nobody wants that point A. They want to get to point B with truth and understanding. We all share that and have that in common. How about eternal life? Hope for a not just a temporary future, but a permanent, eternal future. Many different religions obviously have existed over the thousands, the millennia of mankind. They all have some greater hope. Again, we have that in common. We all want that point B. So my answer three, or part three to my answer, then is how do you get from point A to point B? The great question in life that everyone has ever been born and has had a thought. It could be a one-year-old. He's here and he wants to get over there to his pacifier. He's here. He wants to get over there to the food. You're a student here. You don't have a career. You come from a background of no resources. Your family's poor and you want to get to a better point so that your family can be better off. You're a business owner and you're developing a product and you want to get that to market to benefit people's lives so you can have prosperity, wealth. Nothing wrong with that. We all have, again, this point B, but the third part of the answer is, what do we have in common? We have in common that we're all trying to get from point A to point B. We all have that great question in life is, how do I get there? How do I get from point A to point B? Nations ask that question. They want nationalistic pride. We want peace. We need resources that'll make us happy. We want increased power and respect in the world. And they take actions or have taken actions to try to get there. How do I, my family, my town, my county, how does mankind go from problems to blessings? From failure to success, from misery to happiness, from want to wealth, from ignorance to understanding, from death to life. How do we get from point A to point B? We all try something. There's no person who's ever existed that did not try to live, to sustain themselves, and to improve their condition. They find themselves naked, I want clothes. Once I'm clothed, I want to eat, I'm hungry. Once I'm hungry, I want a house. Once I got a house, I want a better house. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, we are programmed with those things, but we all want to go from point A to point B. We map out, referring to individuals, families, mankind. Of course, we all attempt that journey from point A to point B. And each of us, whether we know it or not, chooses a route. Again, looking at this map, we've all tried our way to get there. I say we, again, individuals, families, communities, towns, cities, states, nations, continents. You know, we all try our own way, whatever that is. We learn from what we've seen, from what we've read. We're influenced by those around us. But one way or the other, we all start on that journey, making decisions on how I can get to point B. And we have that process in common. And that's about it. Think about it. What else does man, person next to you, behind you, in other areas of the world, what do you have in common? Your people. Okay, well, beyond that, we all have these things in common. We all want the answer, don't we? Who does not want the answer of how to get from point A, where you find yourselves today, to point B, a better place, a better place? Is there anybody that does not want that? I think the answer, of course, is no. We all want that. Well, there's good news. Good news. There is one way to get from point A to point B. There's not two. There's not three. There's not 50. It doesn't have lots of turns. It's simple. It's not complicated. It's not hidden. It won't be hidden. It's to the point, and it works. There is only one way. If standing here today, you can't look at the history of mankind and figure out that no nation on earth, no tribe, no continent, no city, no town, no state has ever gotten from point A to point B. Is there a utopia that has ever existed on this planet? The answer is no. Not even close. Why? Because mankind, us, have tried every possible way we can think of. Now, again, we've had help in being bad decision makers. Of course, there is evil. Satan is no longer here. He's been bound. He's been removed from that equation. But let's not put all the blame on him in one sense. We've participated in that process of making bad decisions, of choices, of neglecting truth. Okay, so we have plenty of blame to share. But again, there's good news is that there is a way, a singular way that you will see, that you will see. The only way to give the answer, the only way to get from point A to point B is this: God's way under the leadership of Jesus Christ. That is the only way. Some of you won't like what I just said. Some of you won't believe what I just said. Many of you will. You've seen now through the misery, the horrendous things that we've lived through, you're getting an idea that that's got to be the answer. That's got to be the truth. There is only one way, and that way is God's way under the leadership of Jesus Christ. I'd like to look at the results of man's point A in his journey or attempted journey to point B. And we can look at a lot of this. I'll just go through quickly, just by way of setting the stage and reminding us, convicting us, convincing us, You know, governments, we've tried everything as mankind. Communism, monarchy, authoritarian, democracy, dictatorships, federations, Marxism, Islamic republics, oligarchies, socialism, theocracies, you name it. You know, mankind's not stupid. They're creative. They've tried every type of government that can be thought of. What hasn't been tried? We've tried everything. Religions, per se. Again, false religions, we will learn. But again, Islam, Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism, Shinto, mysticism, paganism, hundreds of different forms of Christian religion. Again, religion's been a tool at man's disposal in attempting to get to point B. Has it worked? Has religion on this earth created peace? Has it created fulfillment, productiveness, kindness, a sense of community, love, prosperity, good health, friendships, truth, understanding? Has religion got us to that common point B? Of course not. More people have been killed on this planet in the name of religion than for any other reason. Religion has not worked for mankind. Why? Because it's not right. There is only one way. It's God's way under the leadership of Jesus Christ. Mankind has tried education. Nearly a billion people entered the 21st century unable to read or sign their name. Our education systems have not worked. We can look at the other results of crime and violence, disease, war. Everything ties back to education. But nearly a billion people in the modern era could not read. Our education system obviously did not work. How about the financial system, the economic system that mankind put in place? In a modern age, I'm not going back to 1300s, 1400s, 1500s, I'm talking about 1900s and beyond. In a modern age of mankind's developed society, according to UNICEF, 22,000 children died each day to poverty in the modern era of mankind. 22,000 children a day died due to poverty. That's a modern era. The wealthiest 20% of the world's population accounted for 77% of total private consumption. Well, man's good. We're going to share the wealth. We're going to feed our fellow man. We're going to take care. We're going to be the good Samaritan. No, we will not do that as mankind. The wealthiest 20% have gobbled up 77% of consumption, of things produced. Again, there are some parts of that that aren't bad. You work hard, you're rewarded for it. But that's not how that system worked, unfortunately. In developing countries, 2.5 billion, a third of the world's population, in a modern era of man, at his best, a third of the world of the people, of the world's people, relied on biomass, your fuel, firewood, charcoal, animal dung to meet energy needs. Well, we got all this technology. We sent man to the moon. We did all these things. We got all this warfare and equipment and technology. A third of mankind in the modern era didn't have an energy source. Think about that. All that technology. I've got a smartphone. I can do 22 billion calculations per second, but we can't get energy to a third of the world's population. That's going to change. Going to change. The resulting indoor air pollution claimed the lives of 1.5 million people a year. More than half of those below the age of five. That's 4,000 deaths a day resulting from a lack of energy, just from all the pollution inside houses and so forth. It's hard to believe that mankind, at its best in a modern era, that was the best that we could do. That was the best that we could do. That's going to change. Human trafficking. Oh, slavery. No, that's something that was done long away. Mankind rose above that. Well, Dave, don't tell me that we had slavery on this planet in the modern era. Now, human trafficking, a $32 billion quote-unquote industry, had 27 million people involved in that industry in modern day times. It's a modern-day slavery. You know, over 1 million of those are children involved in sex slaves, as sex trade. Hard to believe that that's mankind's best modern, with all its resources, all its knowledge, all its understanding. Why? Because it's trying to get to point B in a wrong way, in a way that will never lead to that point B that we all share and have in common. How about wars and genocides? That'd be a good benchmark, a study, a statistic to show how mankind has done in the modern age. I'm just going to rattle these off. 1911 to 1920, Mexican Revolution, 500,000 to 2 million. And most of these, you'll notice there's a range given. Why? Because man doesn't even know how to... Sometimes these things are so bad, we can't even tell how many people were killed. They had no clue. Was it 500,000 or was it 2 million? I don't know. The government doesn't know. Why? Because when things go awry, when chaos erupts, you've got all kinds of people score settling. You didn't like your neighbor all the time. So he hits his golf ball into your yard. There's a war breaks out. Guess what? You go kill him. People take advantage of these things. Just listen to these wars. 1914 to 1918, World War I, 16 million. 1915 to 1923, Armenian genocide, 300,000 to 1.5 million deaths. Russian Civil War, 1917 to 1921, 5 million to 9 million. Spanish Civil War, 1936 to 39, 500,000 to 1 million. World War II, 1939 to 1945, 50 million to 85 million, depending on how you count. 1945 to 1950, the expulsion of the Germans, 500,000 to 3 million, basically ethnic cleansings. Germans, you lost. We're going to kill any of you survivors that are in our country now. We hardly ever heard of that. I didn't hear of that as a kid in school. Ethnic cleansing of the Germans. Did anybody hear that? I didn't know about that. 1950, 1953, Korean War, 400,000 to 4.5 million. 1955 to 75, Vietnam War, 800,000 to 3 million. 1966 to 70, Nigerian Civil War, 1 million to 3 million. Ethnic cleansing of the Igbo people, and then a civil war. Bangladesh Genocide, 1971, 26,000 to 3 million. I could give a range like that. This is out of man's textbooks. Cambodian Genocide, 1975 to 79, 1 million to 3 million. Political mass killings by communist forces, primarily the result of all the deaths, the cause of all the deaths. 1979 to 2000, war in Afghanistan, 500,000 to 2 million. 1983 to 2005, Second Sudanese Civil War, 1 million to 2 million. 1994, Rwandan Genocide, 500,000 to 1 million. 1998 to 2003, Second Congo War, and so on and so forth. How about medicine? Disease, epidemics. Man was able to, through technology, eliminate that. No. 1918, 1920, 75 million people died in a flu pandemic. 75 million people, 1918 to 1920. That's hard to believe in man's modern era that that could happen. It did. 1981 to present, HIV and AIDS, 30 million people have died from that. I know the last decade, it barely makes the news anymore, or it barely made the news anymore. An estimated 40 million people are living with HIV and AIDS. Of course, many of them now are dead. Annually, there are 350 to 500 million cases of malaria, with 1 million fatalities. 80% of those are children. Malaria, in the modern era of man's best technology, best medical research, money, resources, would not, it could, but it would not prevent 350 to 500 million deaths a year. It's hard to believe. Hard to believe. 1.8 million children die each year from diarrhea. I can't get my mind around that. In a modern era, in a modern time, with man with its resources, with a some sort of desire to get to point B, did not make any attempt to fix these problems. Famines, 1921, Russian famine. We've got plenty of food, don't we? The earth is filled with food. 1921 to 22, Russian famine, 5 million to 10 million people died. Starvation. Starvation? In the 20th century?
Yeah.
5 to 10 million people. 1932 to 33, Soviet famine, 2.5 million to 8 million. Textbooks say targeted famine. Again, governments, abuse of power, use starvation as a targeted way to control, to eliminate people. Targeted famine and forced relocation of Soviet ethnic groups by Stalin regime. 1944 to 45, Dutch East Indies, 2.4 million. 1958 to 1962, Great Chinese Famine, 15 million to 55 million people. That's 1958 to 62. Up to 55 million people during the Great Leap Forward, as it was called. Under Mao Zedong, tens of millions of Chinese starved to death. State violence during this period further exacerbated the death toll, and some 2.5 million people were beaten or tortured to death in connection with Great Leap Forward policies. That's man's way of trying to go from a point A to an improved, a better point B. Man's way did not work and will not work. It cannot work. Water. How simple a thing. You want to judge mankind with an earth that's 70% water? How well did we do with water? 1.1 billion people have inadequate access or had inadequate access to water, and 2.6 billion, a third, of mankind lacked basic sanitation. A third of the world could not flush a toilet as I was used to. Think of that. That's man's best. Over thousands of years, we've gotten to this point where a third of mankind has no basic sanitation. Of course, we can look at any aspect here. Entertainment, sexuality, crime, violence, divorce, single parenthood, consumerism, all kinds of things that man tries when it's thinking it's going to go from point A to point B, you know, consumerism. I'm going to buy everything, and that'll make me happy. It'll bring fulfillment to me. Of course, we know those things did not work, and they will not work. I guess you noticed that all the stats, all the figures I gave, as I mentioned, are from the 20th, 21st century. These aren't, you know, back in the bubonic plague or something, you know, 1,000 years ago. This is man's best when he's evolved, so to speak, socially, education systems, the most educated group of population on earth at the time, could not solve, could not get to point B. The man's best simply can't get to point B. Only one way to point B, as I've said, is God's way under the leadership of Jesus Christ. Behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, when the plowman shall overtake the reaper, and the treader of grapes him who sows seed. The mountains shall drip with sweet wine, and all the hills shall flow with it. This one way to point B, this day described in Amos 9, verse 13, starts today. Those conditions, sounds like point B, doesn't it? Sure does. They start today. For the seed shall be prosperous, the vine shall give its fruit, the ground shall give her increase, and the heavens shall give their due. I will cause the remnant of this people to possess all these. This one way to point B, that point B condition, which sounds awfully nice, starts today. That's described in Zechariah 8, verse 12. He, Jesus Christ, shall judge between the nations and rebuke many people. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. This one way to point B, which sounds good. It doesn't sound good in earth, a world, a mankind absent of weaponry, of war. That's point B that we've been looking for. That day described in Isaiah 2 verse 4 starts today. It starts today with you. They shall obtain joy and gladness and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. Those point A qualities, features, descriptors are going to go away. It's going to take time. But that point of joy and gladness, as described in Isaiah 35:10, starts today. All these things start today under the leadership of Jesus Christ. Mankind has been at point A since man has existed. And it's longed for a better and improved, a hope of point B. And man has tried every direction, every idea, every government, every thought, every type of everything you can think of to get to that point B. And we have that point A, the process of attempting to get to point B and point B. We have those things in common. There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. But God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. Jesus, from Jerusalem, says to you today, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. I am the way from point A to point B. I am the truth and the life. On behalf of Jesus Christ, welcome to the kingdom of God.